Shit show.
Well, welcome back to Shit Show Saturday. We have Shit Show Ken in the house.
Howdy, howdy.
Howdy. How do you feel about the term shit show? You into it?
I like it, actually. I'm pretty comfortable with the term shit show. That feels right.
Okay, what song do you want played when you walk into a room?
Man, that's a good question. Forever Young by Bob Dylan.
Ooh, that's a good choice.
May you stay forever.
I don't know if anybody else has said Dylan before. Okay, favorite carb?
I love mashed potatoes, but I'll say bread.
What kind of bread?
Some kind of like really crusty, rustic bread, you know, something hearty with some good butter, like local made butter.
Some salt in it. Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Cheese.
Right now I'm on a camembert kick. I really like some aged cheddar though as well.
That's the number one answer, I feel like.
It's the right
white
answer.
Cheddar. Well, yeah, sharp cheddar, white cheddar is like is it. Who knew? Okay, and condiment.
It's a tough one. I really like spicy mustard and I also love sriracha.
Okay.
So it'd be one of those two.
Just trying to think what will you get more bang for your buck?
Well, sriracha has a little bit more flexibility. I feel like it can be used in like
a little more versatile.
Meals.
Yes.
Yeah. You can put it in anything but cereal.
This is very true. It is. Okay, Ken. So when did you find out that you were an adult child?
Boy, that's a good question. So I got into recovery for addiction in 2016. And I think by 2018, I realized like codependency was pretty heavy in my family. And it was a big part of my behavior and cycles. And so I would say somewhere around 2019, where I started to like get an idea about the adult child thing. But I dated a woman at the end of 2020 who had been working ACA. And we had this very short relationship. It was like 5 weeks, but there was a lot of, it was a very connected relationship and it was like very direct. I mean, she was an ACA who had been working the program for about 5 years. So she had really good communication. And it was like some of the things like my adult child stuff was popping up. And she said, you know, like those things that pop up make me want to fix you. And I can't do that. Mm. And I need to end this relationship as much as I enjoy it. And a 5 week relationship. And I just broke down. I mean, but it was a very cathartic breakdown, right? It was the moment that I realized I needed to do this work. And so I would say if there was like a moment, that was the moment.
And was the breakdown like emotional flashback like?
No, it wasn't really. You know, the breakdown was more like it was surrender. It was like, you know, it's time. I can't keep fighting this. You know, I had known since I was a child that I believed that I was fundamentally broken, that something was wrong with me, you know? And by this point in time, I had been practicing mindfulness meditation and stuff for about 4 years by the time I had this relationship. And so I knew that that wasn't true, that I was fundamentally broken. I knew it in my brain, but I didn't know it in my heart.
Yeah.
And it was like in that moment where I had kind of surrendered to letting it into my heart, you know, like I need to open my heart to this reality that I'm not a fundamentally broken human, that things have happened to me that cause me to act in the way that I act and to feel and think the things I felt and think, but that wasn't who I was.
Mm-hmm. So tell me what these behaviors were that were adult childlike that were showing up that she wanted to fix.
Well, feeling like I needed to appear in a specific way, you know, like in the conversation, reacting to something that she said and me trying to fix my own, maybe trying to fix my own response or trying to have the right answer in response to a conversation. You know, it was a lot of like mind reading behavior, people pleasing. Those are the two that come to mind immediately. You know, it was like really trying to show up as the person I thought she wanted me to be rather than showing up as who I am, you know?
So at that point you had, you know, some recovery and healing under your belt. Was there an understanding that like this obviously was kind of divinely inspired in a way, like for you to be able to work on your stuff.
It felt like it. It's kind of interesting the way things sort of fell into place because I started my recovery with a program called Refuge Recovery, which is a Buddhist-based recovery program. I backdoored my way into that. Like I didn't want it, but I thought I was going to use that program for other purposes, you know? And then eventually I realized I needed to get in, that I needed recovery, that I needed to accept it and embrace it. And then I did CODA for about a year. And then, I took some time off from CODA and I went and I hiked the Appalachian Trail, the entire thing. And during that experience, I had a bunch of releases of certain patterns that I had been holding on to, like my inability to ask for help, right? I'm in the middle of this experience and I needed help. I couldn't do the next thing alone. So, it's like I was forced, the universe forced me to accept help, accept being part of a community and that sort of thing. And so I got back and I met this woman and then, she introduced me to
Did you
ACA.
meet her like in recovery, like in the room?
No, I didn't. I met her on like Bumble or one of the dating apps, but I saw in her, they always say if you see somebody that has what you want, that's the person like kind of to be your sponsor. And just watching our relationship, I saw what I wanted in her. I saw this directness of communication, her own ability to take care of herself, regardless of what was happening inside me, and it was just like she just really was really everything was on the table, it was clear communication, direct communication, loving herself, caring about herself. And it's just like, wow, this is what I need, this is what I want. And then shortly after that, I started working ACA like the next day or something. And I got to the end of step two, working ACA, and I realized I didn't have my spiritual affairs in place, right? Like I knew I had spirituality, but I didn't really understand it. And I was still a little bit afraid of embracing it, because I had had some religious abuse as a child. And so I really wasn't ready to really like dive into my spirituality, but I knew I had to, right? It's like, okay, if this program's going to work for me, I need to have my own spirituality. I need to understand it and let it be part of my everyday, And so I really embraced it. And in March of 2021, a few months later, I had a spiritual awakening. And realized, oh, this is my path, And actually it changed my whole trajectory. I was an executive at the time. I was a cybersecurity specialist. I had, this long career working in government, and I realized I need to be doing something else, And I changed directions, I retired in July of that year and started following my path. So it didn't occur to me at the moment that it was, divinely set up, but it does now, It was like later, like so much for me in my recovery. There's so many things that, I hear it the first time and it just doesn't quite land right. And you hear it again. And by the time you've heard it 100 times, you're like, oh, this is truth, Like this is the way the world works. It's like the serenity prayer. I don't know, 1,000 times I heard the serenity prayer. I was like, this is really hokey. And now I'm like, this is the most
The
sustained, it's the shit. It's the most succinct description of like taking care of your own shit and like staying in your lane and having equanimity and,
like inner
acceptance.
child work. I thought it was so corny. I'm like, all right, but now I'm like, it's crucial. So interesting. Okay, so paint the picture of your childhood. Where did you
Oh
grow up?
boy. So I grew up in a little town in Pennsylvania called Honeybrook. It's west of Philly. It's about, when I was a kid, it was about 1.5 hours from Philly. Now it's a little further because of traffic. As a young child, I was very loving, affectionate, really curious, intelligent kid. And, my family conditioning kind of squeezed that out of me over time. I think by the time I was in fourth grade, there were some neurotic behaviors that were happening, like chewing my fingers, chewing the calluses on my hands,
I chewed the calluses on my feet as a kid.
Oh, really?
Yes, I'll
For
admit.
serious?
Yeah, I'll
Yeah,
admit.
okay. Yeah. So those kind of things started to show up. And then like this rigid perfectionism where if I made this simple mistake, I would blow it out of proportion, you know, like on my schoolwork, you know. And yeah, and then yeah, there's just a lot of screaming. There was no direct communication. Anything that ever happened, you know, like struggles that happened, challenges that happened, would get like brushed under the rug. You know, there'd never be any conversation about it, you know. A lot of that, a lot of like mind reading and codependency, and my father had a serious issue with alcohol until he was in his 50s. My mother very codependent. They both, you know, came from dysfunctional families. You know, when I did my step work, you know, it was became super obvious that it could not have turned out any other way. You know, just I can look back and see generations of the, you know, dysfunction and inner child behavior. And yeah, as a teenager, I was pretty angry, understandably so, you know, being raised in a household that wasn't safe, that was pretty much at all times scary. Since we didn't talk about things, I really couldn't talk with my friends about it. I didn't have, you know, an outlet. I had nowhere. I was isolated, you know, for pretty much all of my childhood, you know, isolated. And yeah, just really angry about it. You know, I don't think it's possible to bottle all that stuff up and not be pretty freaking angry about it, especially as a
Absolutely.
teenager, you know, where it's started to show up to me really a lot lately. I have this really strong sense of justice, and people have mentioned this to me a bunch of times, but it's really become more and more obvious how that's being played out by my inner teenager. I think I do have a, you know, innately a sense of justice, but I think also that's kind of
Amplified.
amplified by my inner teen, you know.
I think that that's really a common thing amongst us, you know?
Is that right? You think so?
Yes, it is. Yeah. Like a sense of injustice, and because of what we, there was no justice for
Right.
us. So were you aware of the alcoholism, like as a kid?
I was, yeah. Of course, we only talked about it in the home. You know, it's funny, you know, the don't talk, don't trust, don't feel, unspoken rules. You know, I see the way that that was a really clear unspoken rule. It was never said directly, but it was said indirectly, like really loudly. You know, like we just didn't talk about my father's drinking. You know, since we didn't talk about it, since it was like really reinforced, we don't talk about this, it wasn't safe to talk with others about it. And so I had no outlet, you know, there was no, it felt just so isolated.
Was the drinking out in the open or hidden?
Yeah, it was very much out in the open. It was, yeah, you couldn't not see it, you know.
Daily?
What was that?
Daily drinking?
Daily, yes. Yeah, daily. Yeah, and it was, you know, yeah, it was really severe, you know, like very like he was like fall down drunk pretty much every day. Now, both of my parents were functional, you know, they both worked. They both worked to excess, you know. So that did provide a little bit of cover. You know, it's like when the yard is mowed and the bills are getting paid, you know, and then people just don't notice, you know, the alcoholism and the dysfunction as much, you know.
Did you have siblings?
Yes, one older, one brother. And I'm convinced that being the middle child also had an impact on the way that things manifested in my life, you know.
So what was the role that you played?
I was a scapegoat, you know, undeniably the scapegoat. Yeah, it's kind of weird because, you know, my early years, like I had mentioned, I was a pretty intelligent kid. I did really well in school in my earlier years. And I think that I think that was like an issue of resentment. You know, I think it created some resentment. You know, my father didn't finish high school. I think that he probably was a little bit picked on within his family, you know, about things along those lines, you know, education and stuff, you know. And I think it was something that, you know, he didn't really appreciate my intellect and the fact that I was doing well in school and all that kind of stuff. And so Yeah, I think it became a point of scapegoating me, you know. And then that turned into like it, you know, I turned away from my education because it was this point of conflict all the time, right? And like when you're relying on your family, the people who you're relying on to take care of you know, are telling you that that some this part of you know, your education, your attention toward your education is a problem. It's natural that you would turn away from it because you need them. I needed them, right? I needed my parents. I needed my family. And so, of course, I would turn my back on my education.
Yeah, that's really just man like really it shows how fucking insidious like this shit is that like doing well in school becomes a problem, you know?
Right.
Like it just
Yeah.
like really shows just like how fucked up all this shit is.
Yeah, I mean, it is insidious is the right word for sure. I mean, it's really just goes so deep and it's not easy to see. You know, we were talking earlier about conditioning and it's like you don't see your conditioning, you know? The fish doesn't see the water.
So then, with the anger coming out as a teenager, did you get into trouble?
I did. You know, I was one of those kids. I was always a pretty polite kid, so in class, I wouldn't do work, but I would keep my mouth shut for the most part. Outside of school, I would get myself into trouble, you know. Eventually I started partying with friends and we just, you know, there was a group of us that just got into mischief. You know, we would have like big egg fights where we would like divide into teams and throw eggs at each other, or we would throw eggs at cars and stuff like that, you know. So mischief, it was mostly mostly harmless.
Yeah, stupid teenage shit.
Yeah, stupid teenage shit, you know. I got my dad's truck stuck in a cornfield one time. That wasn't so great. We did, you know, mostly harmless.
Okay, shit show dudes, you can tune out. This is for my fellow shit show ladies. Are you going through perimenopause or menopause? I'm not quite there yet, but I know that I have plenty to look forward to. Feeling like a wet sock driving down the highway, night sweats, poor sleep, feeling tired all the time, bloating, gas. Man, can't wait for this shit. Now, if that is applicable to you, then you have to try Hormone Harmony. So, Hormone Harmony is not just a supplement for women going through perimenopause, menopause, or postmenopause. It's become a phenomenon. Women cannot stop talking about it. A bottle of Hormone Harmony is sold every 24 fucking seconds, okay? Now, Happy Mammoth, the company that created Hormone Harmony, is dedicated to making women's lives easier using only science-backed ingredients that have been proven to work. Now, for my younger shit show women like myself, if you struggle from that vicious week before your period, you want to crawl out of your skin, experience cravings, want to eat everything in the damn house, you feel a little bit down or off, well, Happy Mammoth also has a product for you to make it easier to manage your PMS with their estro control. So for a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code adultchild at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code adultchild for 15% off today. I'm curious to hear about your addiction, your struggle.
My addiction. Yeah. So I was a binge drinker. I would say that I had three main addictions. My addictions were drinking, work, and video games. And I used all of those to great effect to avoid my emotions, to avoid difficult conversations, to avoid life. And, you know, I would say my addiction to alcohol really kind of got bad in the last 5 to 7 years before I quit. You know, I drank, I had, you know, 3 days a week where I would binge drink basically to the point of blackout. I wouldn't maybe, you know, I drank enough that I might not actually black out. You know, my tolerance was high enough that I might not actually black out. But yeah, Wednesday night, Saturday night, Friday night and Saturday night, you know, I would pretty much be, you know, just drunk to the point where I couldn't do much, you know, and I would fall asleep and then wake up and go to work the next day. You know, I'd gotten to the point at the end where I wouldn't do much of anything if alcohol wasn't involved. You know, it's like, oh, you want to go to that party with the friends? Sure. Is there going to be alcohol there? Oh, there's not. Maybe I don't want to go, you know. But I had really isolated prior to that. I was a relatively social person. I've always enjoyed being social, but I've had these, you know, I've always been shy as well. And so I would want to be around people, but then not have the skills to do it, you know? I'm being attacked by my cat. She's gonna have to go.
Why Wednesdays?
Because what it's funny that you asked that question. So what would happen is Saturday night I would get, blotto, and
Yeah.
then I would wake up Sunday and I would just feel like hammered shit. And then Monday, I would still feel pretty bad from Saturday night. And I would have like this tale of depression. Tuesday, I would wake up and I would feel physically okay, but I would still feel depressed. And I could feel that depression like just kind of washing over me. But Wednesday, I would wake up and everything would be fine. Right. And so I would wake up Wednesday morning feeling pretty good. And right then, that moment, I would start planning my evening to get completely shit faced.
And tell me about hitting your bottom.
Yeah, that's an interesting question. So, I've been t married twice. I was in my second marriage, and things were just not going well in the relationship. And my drinking was really showing up, right? And there was a kind of a series of events. My ex had told me she wasn't, she didn't, she couldn't th continue the relationship. You know, she had done all she could do. And then my oldest son got married a year prior, but they didn't have a ceremony. So they were going to have their reception. And at that reception, he and I got into a wrestling match, which turned into me getting punched in the eye three times. And all of these things kind of culminating. And I woke up and I was just like, what in the hell am I doing? You know, like, what's going on here? And I didn't have a clear picture. You know, I really didn't understand everything that was going on, but I knew like something had to change. You know, I couldn't keep doing relationships the way that I was doing them. I couldn't keep drinking in the way that I was. I couldn't keep playing video games the way I was. You know, it's like something had to change. And I wasn't really sure what something was, that something was, but I would say the real bottom moment was sometime shortly after there. Probably, you know, right at the end of October of that year, my youngest son, who was away at college, was home for the weekend, and he had been begging me to smoke a joint with him, and I finally broke down and did it. And afterward, I went outside and I smoked a cigarette and I was looking at the moon, and I don't know what conversation happened between me and the moon, but it was just like, you've got to turn the shit around, you know? And I went to bed immediately and started looking for solutions the next day.
Had you
And
already started your mindfulness practice by then?
I
I'm
had,
assuming
yeah, I had
so.
started, I had started meditating probably 2 or 3 weeks prior. And I was already seeing some pretty good benefit. You know, I was really struggling it with all of these things going on in my life. I was really struggling with some intrusive thoughts, a lot of really loud intrusive thoughts. And at the moment, I thought I maybe was suffering with OCD. You know, I now realize it's just, I think it's just trauma, right? Both my childhood trauma and trauma from life and experiences and so on. But yeah, I started meditating, and within 2 weeks, I started noticing some distance from my intrusive thoughts. I noticed the ability to be able to see the intrusive thoughts and not to cling to them, to realize that it was just a thought, you know, again, just giving myself some distance from the behaviors that I was engaging in. And I felt lighter and more centered. And, you know, just generally, I was feeling a better, you know. And then, yeah, when I hit that moment where I realized, okay, I can't keep doing this, I started looking for some solutions around mindfulness that might include like moderation. And I found Refuge Recovery. And my thought was I was going to use that program to moderate. And that lasted for about 3 months. And I woke up one day and I was like, okay, this is what I've got to do. You know, it's like I don't have a choice. The only way I'm going to live the life I want to live is to give up alcohol and just dive into this. And so I did, you know, I threw myself into it.
I've never been to a Refuge Recovery meeting. I've read the book. I used to go to like these Dharma Punks meditation sessions when I lived in San Francisco.
Yeah.
So how did your upbringing show up in romance?
You know, I think I think one of the things that I have decided is like the sort of hallmark of my relationships has been, I look back at my childhood and I see that my dad was an alcoholic and he was emotionally and verbally abusive. And I feel like my mother didn't protect us, right? She could have taken us out of that environment and she didn't. And so my inner child self says that she was choosing him over me. And so my pattern has been to try to fix that in relationships, to find partners. First of all, to find partners who were, maybe a little bit emotionally broken, because that's what I was used to, my mom and her codependency. So I was looking for that kind of personality and then expecting them to choose me over everything else, and when that didn't work, it would all fall apart. And of course, I showed up in my ways, probably a lot like my dad, emotionally distant. I had no real access to my emotions. I didn't access, have access to the feelings in my body, So of course I was bringing all of that into relationships. And, I most of my relationships have started from a loving perspective, and then eventually the dysfunction just wins out and it turns into screaming at one another, inability to, inability to communicate clearly and ask to have your needs met, and mind reading, expecting the other person to know what you need without telling them what you need, and inability to ask for help when you need help, inability to like meet each other in the middle as like equal partners, the laundry list traits, all of
I
that has
do.
showed up in the relationships.
Okay, well, so you've had a lot of, got sober in, what'd you say, 2018?
2016, I got
16?
sober.
Okay. So when you think about your sobriety recovery, and then as far as then transitioning into doing this childhood work, do you feel like, kind of similar to so many of us, that it was so crucial to first be able to have that sobriety under your belt to be in a position to be able to handle, more of the root causes and conditions?
Yeah, absolutely. I think while I was numbing out, it would have been really difficult for me to see the behaviors that I was engaging in, the adult child behaviors, to be able to make any kind of reasonable progress there, right? So I needed to get sober. I needed to learn how to deal with my emotions and thoughts and be able to just sit with those things and allow them to be without a need to push them away, to be able to see them, to do anything with them, And I just really don't know how you could possibly, maybe somebody else can. I don't think I could have worked through the adult child stuff without having sobriety first. We talked earlier about social media. I gave up social media. I didn't give it up. I took it off my phone about 3 weeks ago. And one of the things that I've noticed, well, first of all, I noticed a physical withdrawal, which I never expected. I actually had physical withdrawal symptoms.
What were the
And,
symptoms?
well, you know, I mean, I had the first one, which was like this constant vigilance, like trying to look to my phone all the time, right? But then I had a couple of days where I was emotionally really distraught at almost anything, like stories coming up that just weren't true. And, really my mind being very busy and just not being stimulated, right? I don't have this thing to turn to. So now my mind is like working overtime, and just like any story that could come up, inner critic stuff just constantly just right at the top of my mind, and that lasted for about 3 days and then it went away, But what has also happened is I noticed that I have greater access to my emotions. And even though I've been doing all this work already for like 8 years, I still can more clearly, just in the last 3 weeks, I can more clearly see my limiting beliefs. I can see my behaviors that show up. I can see my emotions better. I just have better access to it all. And that's just in 3 weeks.
What would you say have been some pivotal moments in your adult child healing process?
Well, I mean, getting started was really pivotal, right? Like just getting on the path and doing that was really pivotal. Man, there have been so many. It would be really hard for me to pick out, but I mean, I would say a moment was recognizing the virtue and the value of the serenity prayer and realizing like just how powerful the sentiments of that prayer are. The serenity to accept the things I cannot change, just acceptance, right? And Not that I accept everything that comes my way, but to recognize that acceptance is a part of the solution, that whatever challenges come up, if I can accept them as they are, I'm going to grasp to them less tightly and they're going to pass more quickly. And I don't have to fight everything. I don't have to change everything. I think a couple other things is I really have this strong belief that I needed to have all the answers to all the questions, and it really stopped me from looking for solutions. If I immediately think I know the answer to the thing, I'm not looking for, well, what are some other options? And that just was a real big part of my upbringing. It was dangerous to not know the answers. If you didn't know the answer, somebody was going to call you out and criticize you and shame you for not knowing the answers. Even if you're just 6 years old and you don't know how to do a thing, you're going to get shamed over that. So it was dangerous to not know the answers. And it just really opened up my curiosity to realize I don't have all the answers. I'm never going to have all the answers. I don't have to have the answers. It's okay not to know. And curiosity is actually a strength. I can learn a whole lot more when I'm curious than when I think I have all the answers. That was a big one. I think another big one was like this idea of having to do things. I had at the end of a relationship, I had this belief that I had to make the relationship work. And that just kept me stuck in that relationship, right? But there was nothing about it that I had to do. I don't have to do anything. I don't even have to eat. If I don't eat, there might be some consequences I don't like, but I don't have to do anything, right? It's all about, am I willing to accept the consequences? So that shift, that mindset shift has been really pivotal. And I would say the other one that comes to mind right now is like the shoulds. When I use the word should and I realize that maybe I have an expectation of myself that may not be really fair. In fact, it might be completely wrong, this expectation that I have for myself. Or if I'm like kind of shoulding in a justice, a righteous kind of way, that I'm not seeing the whole picture, right? That I have this one belief that things are supposed to be in a specific way, and I can't see the complexity of things, I can't see the diversity of things. I don't see the whole picture. And so if I'm saying the word should, I realize I probably would be wise to look at the situation, like step back and ask myself what's really here. Yeah, there's been a lot. I've had a really good therapist for a long time, and she introduced me to this idea of what is the story? I ask myself all the time, when I'm in a difficult situation, what's the story behind whatever emotional response that I'm having. And most of the time the story is some bullshit, because our brains will lie to us in a heartbeat, when I see that, when first of all, when I see it's just a story, it doesn't mean it's true or real. It doesn't mean that the judgment behind it is valid. It just means there's a story. And when I can see that there's a story, it's like, oh, this is just a story. It's bullshit. It may be true, it may not, right?
What about with your kids? How has that unfolded?
That's a good question. It's interesting. First of all, I love my kids. I have three kids. My two older ones are by birth, and the younger one is by adoption. And they all have their own stories. And our relationships are really developing, over the last few years. And I would say, I feel like we have a pretty good connection. It's strained at times because, I was an adult child through
Your
raising them,
childhood.
right? And so I passed on all of those traits. I passed on the behavior. I did all the things I had wished not to do as a parent. And I have been tried to be very accountable to recognize, okay, I have done some things I'm not proud of, but I'm here to talk about them. If you want to talk about them, please let's have a conversation. I will be accountable for my part. And also, there are probably some things I'm not aware of. I've apologized for the things I'm aware of, and the other things I may not be aware of. The only way I'm going to do anything to heal myself or to help you move through this thing is for you to let me know like what I've done,
And have they been open to that?
They've been open to it for the most part. My older two children have, my youngest son has not been quite ready to have those conversations. But, it's his journey, and he'll, if he becomes ready to have the conversation, that's great. I'm here for it. And if not, then I understand. And he has every reason and right to be resentful toward me.
Was it hard to get to a place of kind of acceptance? Like, was the guilt and the shame, as far as the impact that you had on them, was it difficult for you to get to a place of like, you know what, I fucked up, but I'm doing the best that I can now.
It was kind of excruciating, to be honest with you, because I highly identified as a dad. And it was like a big, I loved being a dad. I still love being a dad. I love my kids. I love being involved with them, And so it was really hard to realize that, like, yeah, I was trying really hard and I still fucked up, And I can also look at that situation and say, okay, this is not my fault. I didn't choose this. This was passed along to me. It wasn't my parents' fault. They didn't choose this. It wasn't their parents' fault. They didn't choose this. None of us as children choose to be born into dysfunction, And so again, there's no way it could have turned out differently. Now maybe we can heal and move forward. And like I said, my older two kids are they're on their own healing path and they're working through things at their pace in the ways that make the most sense to them. And I really applaud them for doing the work. I think that we have a mutual respect in that way where they see, that I'm doing the work and that I'm trying my best. And I see that they're doing the same. And it's a proud moment for me to see that, maybe between our two generations or the next generation, we can like turn this thing around, at least in our little branch of the tree,
I love that. So, what are three things that you like about yourself?
Three things I like about myself. I'm curious. That's fun.
Yes, it sure is.
I'm curious. I mean, I'm a pretty intelligent dude, and I really like that. It really makes for an interesting life. And I like to have fun. I mean, I think that everything gets easier when we can inject a little bit of fun into it. So I'd say those are my three things that like pop up right away,
Okay, hope or dream for the future.
Boy, I am a dreamer, so there's lots of dreams there. Well, I tell you my big dream, my like sort of nearest term dream. In 2021, I attempted to hike the Pacific Crest Trail, which goes from Mexico to Canada, but I started in the north and I hiked south and I got to Crater Lake, Oregon, and there were wildfires in Northern California that kept the trail closed, so I really couldn't finish. So in 2027, I'm planning on starting at the Mexican border and hiking north and just doing the whole thing. So that's my near-term dream.
Well, it's right around the corner,
It
Ken.
is, it's not far.
Don't let it all go.